3 o'clock hour, Burns and Gambo Show, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station, live from Brazel Field on the campus of Grand Canyon University, where tonight they open up their 2019 baseball season in their beautifully renovated stadium, which, again, this is the first time I've been inside the stadium in a few years. They've renovated the heck out of it since I've been here. This is on par with any of the nicest spring training stadiums we have here in town.
Oh, my God.
That's gorgeous. Look at this. It's just gorgeous.
It is. Beautiful stadium.
Yep.
And they all the games, free admission, 4,000 seats in here, so anybody can come on by and watch a game.
They play Wichita State tonight, 6 o'clock first pitch, and I think it's even going to be televised on Fox Sports Arizona.
It will be.
I think
that's
I saw
true.
That. Yeah,
yep.
So you got that going on tonight as well. Cliff Kingsbury, we kind of broke it up into two parts, basically. He was a guest on Doug and Wolf's show today as part of Newsmakers Week. Part one was basically about Kyler Murray, the rumors, the speculation, what he thinks about the speculation, all that stuff. Part two, which is probably far more relevant to the conversation, given that it's the likelier outcome, is about Josh Rosen and about working with Josh Rosen and how it's going to be with Josh Rosen. And Kingsbury said that his relationship with Rosen is great. It's awesome. It's fantastic.
Yeah, he needs to understand we're in this together, and I want him to he has, you know, kind of the keys of the castle, and let's build this deal as a group and make sure that he's comfortable in everything we're doing. If he doesn't like something going on with the offense or the way I'm coaching it, hey, let's talk about it and let's come to the best answer. And I think when they have that type of ownership, it goes a long way.
Got to love that, right?
Got to love that.
You don't like something with the offense, come tell me. We'll fix it. We'll get this. This isn't – here's my system. You run it. If you don't like it, tough. It's like, hey, listen, if you don't think this works for you, if you don't think this is good for you, let's change it to make it work for you. So that's what I think Cliff is. You know, with Cliff's experience and the system that he was in, you know, the Mike Leach system, and I think there's going to be a lot of things that you're going to like kid in the candy store. You're going to love the offense. You're going to love the vertical passing game. I mean, I've read a lot of air raid offense stuff lately just to try to catch up on it. Mm-hmm. And it is amazing that they run the ball very well, and the quarterbacks don't take a lot of sacks, and we've talked about that, you know, because the misconception is you're throwing the ball 75 times a game, your quarterback's getting his head taken off, and that's really not the case. I mean, it is a real vertical passing game, and there's a lot of options down the field, and you know, if you could have wide receivers that get separation, you could have a lot of success, which is where when people think who's going to have a big jump, and I was looking at a story today that talked about, you know, what players, it was an ESPN story, what players going to have the biggest jump, there was somebody actually mentioned Josh Rosen picked as one of the rookies who could have the big one. It was an ESPN.com insider story and experts predictions,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And those stories, they're pretty good. There's a lot of stuff in there, Antonio Brown, but what rookie will make the biggest leap in year two? And there was one of the writers that said Josh Rosen. Mina Kimes said Josh Rosen. Part of it is it can't get any worse, but it also talked about Kingsbury.
Oh.
That, I mean, listen, it's very possible that this offense could be just really – it could be possible that other quarterbacks look at this offense and are jealous that they're not in it.
Perhaps. And that was one of the questions that was posed to Cliff today was Rosen and whether he can run the air raid offense the way it's drawn up.
Yeah, I've always been, you know, fascinated with Josh, watching him play at UCLA. The talent he had, the arm talent is extraordinary. You know, it's as good as anybody you'll find. I thought he showed a lot of mental toughness going through a bunch of different coordinators and continues to get up and continues to fight. And that goes a long way. And I think every time I've turned on the tape, there's something you watch that you like and can build with. And so that's exciting for me.
Again, I'm going to go back to something we talked about the last time we were talking about Cliff Kingsbury. And that is, it's not, we hope anyway, we can't say this definitively, but I don't think he's this one-size-fits-all kind of a coach that's going to say, nope, this is my system, these are my plays, I don't care what type of quarterback you are, this is what we're going to do.
And Wilkes was, and wasn't Wilkes exactly opposite?
Wilkes,
I mean, wasn't Wilkes, I mean, the what we think Kingsbury is.
He said he wasn't, but in the final analysis, he was exactly the opposite.
Wilkes could not
change. This is my system. This is what I do.
Could not figure out a way to get players to play at their best.
Yep.
Couldn't do it.
This is what I like. This is how we're going to do things. And I just because I can't imagine. I can't imagine the Cardinals would make that same mistake twice. They might make mistakes in this. They might get the wrong free agent. They might draft the wrong guy. But to hire a coach who fools them a second time on their flexibility and their willingness to adapt to the personnel they have. I can't imagine the Cardinals made that same mistake again. I just can't imagine it. So with that being the assumption, I think Kingsbury, even if Josh Rosen isn't the ideal air raid guy, there's enough of what he can do that Kliff can build something around him that will work and will work well.
Even if they don't win enough games to be in playoff contention next year, but this offense shows signs and Rosen develops, man, that's a win.
Yes.
It's a win. They're going to revamp this roster. They're going to try to win a lot of games. But say they go, you know, say they go 6-10 or 7-9 and don't really push for a playoff spot, but Rosen throws for 3,300 yards with 27 touchdowns and 15 picks and, you know, something like that. And you're like, wow, because more than anything, like, that's the key to the future. The connection between those two,
Rosen's, is the future.
It is. Once you know that that works,
yeah,
man, everything else is just going to fall in line.
At the time of his hire, there was a lot of criticism about Kliff Kingsbury. Obviously, the Sean McVay thing, and that got real tired fast. You know, hey, he shook Sean McVay's hand. He should be the next head coach of the Cardinals. That got kind of old.
That was stupid.
And he was asked about, you know, being compared constantly to McVay, and here's what he said.
No, Sean's a friend, and I have a tremendous amount of respect for him, his work ethic, what he's done. The way he treats people, and so, you know, that's what he's done is kind of lit the league on fire, and that's everybody's looking for the next guy to do that, and I understand that, and so that doesn't bother me.
But Gambo, part of the criticism too was, can he command a room? Okay, he can design an offense.
I think a lot of the criticism was his record in college more than anything.
That too.
If
yes,
you said what was
too.
The number one criticism of Kingsbury coming in, it was like, how's this guy a head coach? He couldn't even win a He's not one of the top 25 or 50 best coaches in college football.
Agreed. That was probably the main reason why people were like, why are you hiring that guy? But I think kind of a subset of the McVay argument was, man, are we hiring head coaches or are we just hiring offensive masterminds? You know, I mean, don't you have to have something in your toolbox other than just the ability to draw up plays? You have to be a leader of men. You have to be able to command a room. You have to be able to...
That sounds like Steve Wilks all over again.
Be that kind
leader
of guy.
Leader of men, command a room, Steve Wilks.
Yeah, and he was asked about presenting himself to the team and whether he's capable of that.
You know, when you get him back in April, that's a little bit early for the win the one for the Gipper speech. But no, I mean, it's going to be about, you know, this is how we're going to do things and why we're going to do things and make sure they understand that... The staff's excited to be here and excited to go to work, and it's a new year. What's happened in the past for all of us doesn't matter. And it's mm-hmm. what we do from that day forward.
You know, I don't know that I, you know, the leader of men and commanding a room and all of that stuff. Man, does your coach exude confidence? Like, because to me, that's more, you know, out of every coach, and I've had so many coaches in all different sports, the coaches that exude the confidence, not the who commands the room and who's the leader of them, like he sounds like a comp. I know what I'm doing. Not like Jeff Fisher, I know what I'm doing. But just like, no, I'm serious. Like, the leader of men and the commander of the commanding the room and the leader of men. Look, you've got to get guys to believe in your system. And the best way to believe in a system is you got to be so confident in what you're doing that the guys buy in.
It's
not leader of men. Thank you, Jordan. Thank you. It's honestly, I swear I'll take this to my grave. It's one of the best. It's one of my favorite cuts ever. Yeah.
I'm not going 7-9.
Yeah.
I know what I'm doing.
I might put that on my tombstone. I know what I'm doing.
Here lies John Gamadoro. He knew what he was doing.
Yeah. Except I want a mausoleum, so I won't have like a
thing. Oh, you won't have the.
I want above the ground. Yeah. I'm not.
You don't want to be in.
I don't want to get eaten by the bugs. I want to be above the ground.
That's yeah. Probably,
so do you understand what I'm saying?
I understand exactly what you're saying.
I think it's a lot about confidence. Does he sound like a leader of men to me? Nah, he's soft-spoken. Does he sound confident in what he's doing? Yeah, you're damn right he does.
Yeah, like he knows something you don't.
Yeah, I don't need this strong voice coming out. I'm the leader of the... He sounds like he's really super confident in what he's going
to
do.
Have you subscribed to the Burns and Gambo podcast?
Yes.
Subscribe. You have? Good
I
for
am,
you.
Yeah.
So have I. Subscribe right now. Actually, I don't. I host the show. I don't listen to it every day. Yeah. I host it.
Oh, I have to listen to it afterwards so I know what we said.
Oh, that's a good call. Yeah. Subscribe right now on your iPhone or your Android. You'll never miss any of the show. The Burns and Gambo podcast brought to you this week by your Valley Chevy dealer. The fallout in New Orleans continues. over the Anthony Davis trade request. Today's firing, was it justified or just another search for another scapegoat? That's coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. Tell Demps, thanks for playing. See ya. Fired today as general manager of the New Orleans Pelicans. That saga is. Alvin Gentry last night
summed it up the best.
Perfectly. Just after they beat the Thunder, a game in which you and I talked about at the end of our show yesterday.
Davis is going to get a fake injury.
Anthony Davis is going to get hurt tonight.
What happened, Les? What
he
happened in
hurt.
The game?
He got a shoulder got contusion. Hurt. And not only did he leave the game, he left the building. He left the building with his agent. They just hightailed it out of there with the injury, right? So the Pelicans win the game against the Thunder. Good quality win without Davis. They rallied behind, was it Julius Randle? Drew Holiday had a big
Julius
game last
Randle
night.
Julius Randle killed
it. Oh, Julius
it last
Randle played
night.
His played his butt it's off
maybe
last
the
night.
The best game he's ever played.
So Gentry, after the game, in describing how happy he is for the team, said, look, let's be honest about this, folks.
I'm happy for all of them. I'm happy for all of them. You know, because to tell you the truth, you know, this whole thing has been a dumpster fire, you know, and it's just hard, you know, for guys. You know, we want guys to be professional and we want them to do this, but it's hard for guys, you know, to go through what they've been through. And to be able to come out and be the team of that quality, I'm happy for all the guys. I just thought that they did a great job.
Yeah, and that was a really good win for Alvin and that team, and there was a lot of players that stepped up and played well. Anthony Davis played, and then he left, and after the game was over, nobody really, you know, people found out that Anthony Davis, like, he left, Rich Paul and him left the building.
Yeah.
Like, they were gone, so.
And can I just cut you?
Yeah,
Alvin Gentry
ahead.
Was asked about that last night. And basically said, I don't want to talk about who's not here.
Don't know if he left the building or not. I have no idea. Then he left the building. I'm happy for the guys that, you know, that played the game and we won.
Poor Alvin Gentry.
Alvin's one of the classiest guys I know, and to be honest with you, I mean, he's a really good coach. He's a really good coach. Last time the Suns had, you know, a good team, Alvin Gentry was the coach of that team. He's the one that swept the Spurs. Alvin Gentry swept the Spurs as the head coach. Listen to this. This is in the Times-Picayune. The proverbial last straw occurred Thursday night when Davis and agent Rich Paul embarrassed the organization by leaving the arena mid-game while the Pelicans were still battling the Oklahoma City Thunder. A team source said Benson, the owner, was furious at the act of defiance and moved quickly to take action. She will not tolerate her organization being affected by players that don't want to be here or agents trying to sabotage her team. So why didn't she find Davis?
I don't know.
I would find him. You don't have a right to leave that team.
So I have no idea. And now the question moving forward is, what do they do with Davis now? I mean, he's hurt, but is he hurt enough that they can justify not playing him the rest of the year? They've already gotten kind of a loose mandate from the league that, hey, if he's healthy, we expect him to play. But obviously him playing is a detriment to everybody. It's a detriment to him. He's not playing hard because he doesn't want to get hurt, and he doesn't want to be there anyway. His teammates resent him for everything that went down. His head coach has called the whole situation a dumpster fire.
Dumpster fire.
His general manager just got fired this morning, which I could be dead wrong on this because I'm telling you, I am not Adrian Wojnarowski, but I'll tell you this. When I saw that he got fired, if you think, in my opinion, if you think for a second that Dell Demps was acting all alone by himself in that organization and turning down the Lakers deal, I think you're crazy. That is not his pay grade. That's above his pay grade to make those decisions.
No, they wanted to take the deal. Somebody nixed the deal. They wanted to take the Lakers
right.
deal. Right.
Somebody above Dell Demps is telling him what to do when it comes to that deal. That's not Dell Demps on some island. You know what? Screw the Lakers. I don't want to deal with the Lakers. I'm not taking Kyle Kuzma, Lonzo Ball, and those first-round picks. I don't want them.
There were people in that organization who wanted to take that L.A. deal and run with it because they knew that this was going to happen. And they were pissed. I think I was the first in the country to report that Anthony Davis was going to play on Friday night.
Yes, last week.
First in the country. Nobody else knew that. He's playing Friday night. If they don't trade him, he's playing. Nobody thought he was going to play. But I had inside knowledge, and I said he's going to play on Friday night. But I also can tell you from being in the middle of that between the teams, between New Orleans and Boston and the Lakers and everything – I had what the Celtics were going to offer, and the Lakers offer what the Lakers offer was, and there were people in that organization that wanted to take that Lakers deal because they felt it was a good deal.
Okay, but here's the thing. If any of those people were above Del Demps on the hierarchy,
yeah,
then they should have taken the deal. You see what I'm saying? So if Mickey Loomis, if Gail Benson said, you know what, that's the deal I want, let's get this thing over with, let's make the trade, you don't think that deal would have been done?
It would have been.
Yeah, they would have called up Del Demps and said, look, I know you're the general manager, I'm your boss, make that deal.
So the bosses nixed the deal because there were people that wanted that deal done. They wanted to make the league. For the reason, simple reason being is that they felt that they could have made a run for the playoffs with those guys. Get rid of Anthony Davis, bring in Kuzma and Ingram and Ball and make a run and go win five games in a row and you're in the playoffs.
Okay, so now that we're agreed on that, my point is that Del Demps wasn't fired because he didn't make the trade with the Lakers and for Anthony Davis. He was fired because they don't trust him to make the best Anthony Davis trade when it comes time to do it. You know what? We know we have to trade him. You're not the guy to do it for us. We don't trust you. We don't trust you to handle that. You can't do it. You're not going to make the best deal for us. You're going to screw this up somehow. So even though, you know, it's not your fault for turning down the Anthony Davis deal, because to be honest with you, we wanted you to turn down the Anthony Davis deal. We don't trust you to get it right this summer when it's time to trade him. And I tell you something else, and I didn't like this when I read this in Woj's story today. Among the preliminary possible candidates to take over the New Orleans Pelicans, former Cleveland GM David Griffin.
Wow.
And you know why I don't like that.
Because you want him to be here with the Suns.
Amen, brother.
Danny Ferry has been named the team's interim general manager. He's been a special advisor for the Pelicans for the last 3 years. They are going to go through an extensive search to find a new GM. Dave Griffin is out there. He is a highly qualified, very good general manager that knows how to put together and run an organization and run a staff. And it would make sense that his name would come up. Now, Griff is waiting for the right job. He's not taking any job. So he is, you know, because he's had opportunities since he left the Cavs. So he's waiting for the right job. He doesn't want to just take any job. He wants to make sure he gets the right job.
Yeah, I know I'm dreaming, and I know dreaming's free. I dream of a day when David Griffin is running the Phoenix Suns, and he's left alone to do it. And he can make decisions on whoever he wants to hire a coach and whoever he wants to trade, whoever he wants to sign, because he's got a proven resume of success.
What an NBA championship.
He's beyond competent and beyond qualified for the job. And to see what frustrates me about this Pelican story, to see them recognize that they're in chaos and to move on Del Demps and to seek potentially a guy like David Griffin to run the organization, I'd be lying if I told you I didn't want my Phoenix Suns to do exactly the same thing. To go find somebody who's got the resume and the track record of success that you can turn the keys over to and say, okay, here, go. Fix this, please. Make this work. I want that so badly.
Well, yeah, because you've run out of patience.
Yes.
Which a lot of people have. They've run out of patience with the losing, because this was supposed to be the year where there was a turnaround. Something. Some kind of turnaround.
Yeah.
30 wins. Something to get excited about.
There's no denying the business of baseball has changed. And in their response to the shift, the players might actually be hurting their own cause. We'll explain how next on the Burns and Gambo Show. Friday afternoon edition. We're not inside the Oxygen Community Studios today. We are instead on the road at Grand Canyon University. Usually when we're here on the campus of GCU, we're over at the basketball arena, but today we are at the baseball field because tonight they are opening up their baseball season tonight here at Brazel Field. They're taking on Wichita State. GCU, WAC champions from a year ago. We had Annie Stankiewicz on earlier. Again, this stadium, if you are a lover of baseball and nice baseball stadiums, you will love this place. It is just gorgeous. It really is nice.
Well, I'm going to stay and watch a game tonight.
There you go.
I am. Got the wife and son coming. We're going to watch the game.
It should be a lot of fun. Good atmosphere. I imagine that same kind of crazy that you get over there with the Havocs, you're going to get a little bit of that tonight here with this. It's going to be televised locally as well on Fox Sports Arizona. So they're really expecting a good crowd. Funny, I was reading this story today on ESPN. It was from Buster Olney. And he said that The problem that some agents and some veteran players are having now is that you're getting a lot of these younger players who are trying to make as much money as they possibly can now. They're signing these contracts now because they're starting to not trust what the system is going to give them a couple years from now in terms of their contracts, right? Aaron Nola signed for a, what, four-year, $45 million
over 4 years.
Saw the Twins sign a couple of players to long-term deals, one included that got like 7 years locked up, seven of the prime of his years locked up at a severely discounted rate. Now, he goes, look, and this is Buster's words, not mine. He goes, look, I'm never going to tell a guy what's a sign for, what their family situation is. Man, $25 million, $45 million, that's a lot of money. But it's obvious that based off of the last couple of off seasons, some of these younger players are saying, rather than wait until I am a free agent and I can really cash in, guys aren't cashing in as free agents anymore because teams are being so cautious with these contracts. If you're going to offer me $40 million right now today, I'm going to take it.
Yeah, why shouldn't
you? And not run the risk of hitting free agency because I don't know what free agency looks like anymore.
What risk is it for the agent? He's got 40 clients. What risk is it for him if you don't make it? All right, I can get $40 million or play it your way, and maybe I only get $10 million. And if I don't play as well, I never get the big contract and I'm out of baseball. You're going to tell me to turn down $40 million? I've always heard this from a lot of players. Never turn down your first big contract. Never turn down your first big one. Now, second one, third one, then you could play. Now you're playing with house money. But players have always told me, I never turn down your first big contract. The one that sets you up financially for the rest of your life. Let you buy a beautiful home, take care of your family, put money in a bank, and let you... And if anything happened, you're set. You're set. I got $25 million. I got $35 million. I got $40 million. You're set for life. You are set for life if you're not stupid, if you're not an idiot.
Right.
You know, you don't try to invest in 18 businesses and...
Go buy an island somewhere like that.
Yeah, listen, you're smart. So never turn down the first big one. But after that one, yeah, you want to play the game then? You want to get to the table? You want to play a little blackjack or roulette? Or you want to... Then you can mess around.
Yeah.
Because you've got that money in the bank that is taking care of you and your family for the rest of you. Who are these agents to tell these guys that they shouldn't take this money? The Twins guys, Max Kepler and Jorge Polanco, five-year deals for each of them. Who is an agent to tell these guys Kepler's contract is worth $35 million? And includes options that could increase it to $44 million. Polanco's is $25 million, could be worth $47 million. Those two guys are set for the rest of their life.
Sure.
Who is an agent to tell them
that they shouldn't?
They should turn down that deal and wait, play it out for 5 years and try to make more.
And then, almost as if on cue, I'm reading this story, I'm saving it in my Evernote, and almost as if on cue.
I know where you're going.
Severino signs a contract with the New York Yankees.
The ace pitcher for the Yankees. Their number one pitcher.
4 years, $40 million.
Yep.
It's front-loaded in case there's a strike a few years from now. So
right.
He gets the bulk of his money before that. There's like a team option for $15 million, and that's exactly the type of player and that's exactly the type of contract that Buster was writing about in his piece. Here's Severino. The Yankees just bought out one, maybe 2 years of his free agency, right?
Yes.
I'm sure if you're a veteran player or if you're an agent, you want Luis Severino to
free agency,
be a free agent
as quickly
so he
as possible.
Can cash in.
Right.
So he can make some big, huge, gigantic contract that can be the standard bearer for the next 5 years in Major League Baseball. Nope. Yankees said,
but that's the give and take.
Said, you know what? We'll give you $40 million right now with a team option for a fifth at another $15 million. And Severino said, that's my first big money contract. I will take
and
it. Thank
should.
You very much.
And he absolutely should.
Yeah.
He's got 55. He's got at least $40 million, possibly 55 coming to him. These agents, they're not the ones risking anything.
So it got
if
me.
Severino blows out his arm, he's got $40 million coming to him. And the agent, if he didn't sign the deal and waited for the agent, maybe he makes whatever he was going to make this year, and then he's out of baseball. The agent, you think the agent cares?
No.
Agent doesn't give a damn. You think these agents care about you?
Yeah.
No, they want to play. They've got all their money. They want to play the game so they can make more money.
So it got me thinking. Is there anybody on the Diamondbacks that they should be looking to give a Aaron Nola, Luis Severino, Whit Merrifield, Max Kepler kind of a deal to? Is there somebody that they, when looking at their roster, looking at what they have left in terms of arbitration, is there somebody out there that they should, or have they already done it in Ketel Marte?
Well, they've done
was
it with Marte.
Was he the guy?
They did it with Marte.
Because he chewed up all his arbitration years. They're all gone. I mean, he's under contract. That contract looks very favorable
for the team. Archie Bradley.
Are you ready to do that with how we finished last year?
Archie Bradley.
Are you ready to commit to him?
I believe in him.
For a 4-year deal?
Sure.
The team option for a fifth?
Listen, Archie didn't have a good year last year, okay? I still believe that Archie Bradley is he's 26 years old. He's got arbitration coming up next year, arbitration coming up the year after that. So if you could give Archie a 4-year contract right now, you'd buy up 2 years of free agency. So you would give him a 4-year deal, you'd buy out. So he's arbitration eligible next year. He's going to make $1.8 million this year. Then he's got arbitration next year and the year after. After that, he's a free agent. So if you gave him a 4-year deal, you'd buy out 2 years of free agency.
Yeah.
Now, for him, you know, is it work? He's got to play this season and then next season and then the season after that before he get a free agency. So if the Diamondbacks came to him and said, hey, we want to give you $40 million right now. I mean, I think it'd be stupid not to take it.
I think the crazier question would be the Diamondbacks crazy to offer him that kind of money based off of, I mean, look, he was so good a year ago. He was so good for the first half of last year. Just those last 2 months, man. Those last 2 months is that's the only thing that would give me pause on that. I think he's going to be dominant.
You asked if there was a guy.
No, I know.
And that's the guy.
And that's the guy. And I appreciate you coming up with it, guy. Jim Kirkjian on Gulick and Wingo today. Machado and Harper unsigned. That's not good for baseball.
Nobody's figured this out yet, and I'm not sure this is really good for the game that two players of this magnitude are still unsigned in this situation. So I could take a guess for you, but it would only be a guess because we're all guessing. And again, after this amount of time, to have so little concrete proof, evidence, whatever, on where these guys are going, it's just stunning we are where we are.
Machado met with the Padres people for a second
again.
Time.
Again.
Yep.
Again, I saw a fascinating thing today about how the Astros almost traded for Harper at the deadline last year. They almost traded for Bryce Harper.
Wow.
The Astros.
Yeah.
Which would have been fascinating because I think if they would have traded for him, they probably would have found a way to keep him.
They might have found a way to keep him, and they might have found a way to potentially – I mean, I don't know. The Red Sox were kind of a buzzsaw last year. I don't know if that would have kept
them. The San Diego Padres are the one organization that all the agents want. That's what they want. Spend the money. They spent the money on Hosmer. Now they're looking at Machado. They looked at Harper. They are the one organization that's kind of bucking the trend of everybody else. And that's what the agents, that's what all Scott Boras. I want a team like I love the Padres. Got to love the Padres. Look, they're trying to spend money. They're trying to get better.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit different than some of the other organizations with, you know, financial responsibility and, you know, let's project 10 years down the road. Is it worth it? And maybe the Padres also think that, you know what, we might be able to get – we never thought we could get a guy. We could pay $300 million, but maybe if the price comes down to $220, we can get in on it.
Perhaps, yeah. Considering Cliff Kingsbury's history, everyone's expecting some high-flying passing attack, but one of the Cardinals coaches believes the actual offense could be a big surprise to you in the fall. We'll explain coming up on the Burns and Gambo Show. And this is a quote. Quote. I think people are going to be surprised by the amount that we do run the ball. It's a big part of this offense in addition to the screen game. It's not just throwing it every down, and there's going to be a lot of physicality in this offense, close quote.
So we said about Kugler when they got him, physical, real physical, offensive line. They're going to love playing for this guy because, you know, he brings a certain level of physicality. It's what he coaches. It's how he coaches. He wants an offensive line that's going to mash people. I mean, so if you've got an offensive line like that, why wouldn't you? Why wouldn't you run the football?
That was Sean Kugler quoted via C.J. Holmes of The Athletic talking about how there's misconceptions about this offense, about what this offense is going to look like. Whenever that first game rolls around, whenever the schedule is released sometime and when we see actual football, not the preseason. I don't count the preseason. But when the regular season begins, I don't know about you, Gambo. I almost can't wait to see what it looks like now. Like, what is it going to be? How's it going to work? How's it going to function? How are they going to blend the run and the pass? And what do the concepts look like? And what are the schemes?
You know why?
I can't wait to see it.
You know why? Because of the misconception. Okay. How many Mike Leach games have you watched over the years?
Countless.
How many Cliff Kingsbury games have you watched?
Not as many as Leach, but...
I mean, not that many at all.
But some.
But even then... We're all in the same boat.
But I mean, even then, I don't even think it's going to be a direct translation, Cliff Kingsbury and what he did at Texas Tech to the NFL. I think it's going to look even different than that.
It will. But follow my point here. We just automatically assume the connection between Kingsbury and Leach. We've seen Leach's offenses. We've seen him throw the ball 70 times. Cliff Kingsbury in a game once threw the ball over 70 times in a game. He did. He threw the ball 70 times in a football game. And we're used to seeing Leach because he's in the Pac-12 now. And we know. So we're used to him throwing the ball 60, 65. You know, anytime they throw the ball under 50, like, oh, my God, they only threw it 48 times in a game. So it's a misconception thing. So the fact that they may run the ball and the quarterback doesn't get sacked and they throw high percentage passes, it's inconceivable to us because it's not what we know from Mike Leach.
Sure.
It's not what we know. So Cliff Kingsbury is a Mike Leach disciple. We know Mike Leach really, really well. All of us. Most of us, we know Mike Leach's offenses extremely well. But we don't know Cliff Kingsbury's offenses because we haven't watched a lot of his games. We went a couple here or there, you know, when you're scrolling around a TV. I don't think any of us made a point like, okay, we got to really watch Texas Tech on Saturday.
Very rarely.
That's what I'm saying. You may have caught a glimpse. You may have watched a little bit. You may have watched one of his games because you were watching another team play. Nobody made a point to go watch Texas Tech football games.
Yeah.
So I'm just saying I think that the reason why you're saying that is because there's this misconception that we believe that this is a Mike Leach offense, which it's not.
Cliff Kingsbury, when he was on Doug and Wolf this morning as part of Newsmakers Week, was talking about the physicality of the Cardinals, which, again, is not a word that you necessarily associate with air raid football.
No, I think once again, everybody has their different styles and has changed their air raid version to fit their personality.
So what's the Kingsbury air raid?
Yeah, we're going to be a physical attacking offense, you know, regardless of whether we're running every play or throwing it. You know, that's going to be how we play is physical in the trenches and on the perimeter and try to make as many first downs and score as many points as possible.
And again, that's the source of my curiosity here. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I agree with it. It's going to be to think that it's just going to be a cut, copy, and paste version of what Cliff Kingsbury did at Texas Tech is, of course it's not. There's going to be variation. There's going to be adaptation. What is it? Is Sean Coogler right? Are we going to be surprised?
Well, they hired
by how
him.
Often they're running the football?
But they hired him based on what his offenses did at Texas Tech. Okay, so I do think it's going to be very similar. I'm sure I agree with you on the variations, but they hired him based on the fact that that offense was kicked ass in college. The defense wasn't good, but their offenses were really good.
Yeah.
So you're not hiring them and saying, I really love what you did at Texas Tech. Now come to the NFL and do something completely different. Run the ball 60% of the time.
Well, they're not going to do that.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, so he was hired based on the success he had as and not as with wins and losses. The success the offense had.
Right.
But not wins and losses. The offense was very, very good.
Right.
They gave defensive coordinators fits.
It was an unusually busy day in the world of Colin Kaepernick today in the National Football League as we transition out of that and into Colin Kaepernick. There were two bits of news about Kaepernick today. Number one, reportedly he asked for $20 million from the AAF and was told no. And number two, he and Eric Reed have both settled their collusion case against the National Football League.
Let's start with the AAF. He would have been a hell of a draw, so he probably has a right to ask for a lot of money. $20 million, I don't know. I mean, it's a new league starting out. They probably can't afford that, but he would have been a big draw. People would have wanted to see him. He hasn't played in years, so I think they would have came to see him play. But the other point, so I do agree that he probably has the right to ask for a lot more money than what the average player is making. But also, if you really do want to get back to playing football, don't at some point you got to play football? If you really want to get back, I mean, these players are going to get scouted by the NFL. Go play. Go play the season. You know, maybe not $20 million. Maybe get $5 million. Okay? Maybe just get something. Just be reasonable with your asking price and then go play football and prove that you deserve to be back in the NFL.
Well, I'll be honest with you. And I I haven't thought about Colin Kaepernick for the most part.
Since the Nike commercial?
In a long time. I mean, to me, it's sort of, I don't know. I don't spend that much time thinking about it. I don't know how much he does want to play football anymore. His status now for what he has done, I don't want to say it's transcended the sport, but it's moved him into a different area, don't you think? I mean, in some ways, I think there's a certain segment of the population that doesn't even look at Colin Kaepernick as the former San Francisco 49er quarterback.
You're probably right.
They look at Colin Kaepernick as the social activist, the awareness raiser. I mean, whatever.
But that came from being a football player.
Well, of course it did. I mean,
he couldn't have gotten any of that.
I just wonder if this newfound status of what he is now is more important to him than being a football player. You know, being a football player, he doesn't need to be a football player anymore. That this gig, for lack of a better word, that he has now is better for him at this current stage. And he doesn't need football anymore give him the platform.
Obviously, there was a price to play, but it was $20 million.
Right. Well, there was a price in which he'd play. I guess Colin Kaepernick is now such a figure that I don't know if he even really needs football to continue to be a figure.
Oh, no. I'm sure he's financially set.
Yeah.
The Nike commercial, some of the other. I'm sure he's financially set. But, I mean, if he did love the game, he truly loved the game, he'd find a way to go play somewhere. I don't know what time the Hot Shots play this weekend, but I want to at least record it and try to watch it. I did not watch any of the games last week.
Aren't they at Memphis?
I don't know. I couldn't even tell you. I couldn't even tell you the name of the.
I can't wait to watch the Hot Shots this weekend. Who do they play? When? Where? What? Huh?
No, I mean, listen. I was intrigued by the fact that there was a lot of good things said about the league last week.
So, 6 o'clock tomorrow at Memphis.
At Memphis. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
You could go through every team in the league. I don't think I could give you one nickname. I'm serious.
Arizona,
Hot Shots.
There you go.
Salt Lake, the team they just beat.
No idea. Salt Lake.
Stallions.
Stallions, go ahead. Memphis, no idea.
Memphis, I don't know. Atlanta, I don't know.
No idea.
Can't
name any. Just one. Arizona.
I don't even know if I can name the other cities that they're in right now. We're learning. we're getting there. Give us time. We're in the infancy stages. There's no question about it.
I will watch a little bit tomorrow. I'm curious.
Tomorrow
I'm intrigued. They caught my attention.
Well, the NBA is NBA career. His NBA career is just about a half season old. But are the losing ways of the Phoenix Suns taking a toll on DeAndre Ayton?
Taking a toll on me.
We'll talk about that.
I'll tell you that right now. They've taken a toll on me.
Next on the Burns and Gambo Show.